from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Oh, boy. That scenario is with something else.
A lot of you are still texting in on our Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. A lot of you are agreeing with me today. And Chef and G are digging in their heels and sticking with their answer. So if you missed it, check out our podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, go and find the G and Ursula Show podcast. Follow us and you can hear and you can decide for yourself whether I was right or whether G and Chef were right.
Some of you all have figured out the secret with me. You see, the ones that say things like, you're terrible, G, and you're this and that, that doesn't do it. But it's the ones of you that text in and say, G, I'm very disappointed in you. Oh, now, that hurts.
I'm disappointed, like, but I still love you.
Oh, I know. Anne from Kitsap said she was ashamed of us.
Man.
Okay. Right. We're not going to repeat what we did, but check out our podcast and you can listen and then you can still weigh in because, you know, we read the text line.
There you go. Agree to Disagree, brought to you by Garden Roofing and Gutters.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves. Just really go at it.
Term limits is something that we have discussed for senators and Supreme Court justices, but what about term limits for the Tacoma City Council and the Tacoma mayor? So right now, the city is reviewing its charter. That's something it does every 10 years, and the Charter Review Committee plans to recommend extending the amount of time that elected officials could serve. The News Tribune reports that under current rules, someone can only serve as a mayor or on the city council for 10 years consecutively, even if they serve in both roles. So here's what that means. It means if someone who serves two terms on the council, 4 years, if they want to be mayor, they have to resign halfway through their second term in order to run. And the committee's plan is to allow someone to serve for 20 years. What say you to that proposal, G?
When you said that, all I could think of was the Daley family, Mayor Richard Daley in Chicago, and being a mayor for a long extended period of time, I don't think is ever a good idea. No, Ursula, I am not for the extension of being mayor that long. There's no way in the world that anyone should be the mayor for 20 years. No.
Can you, for a point of clarification, you said so they're going to extend it to 20 years so they would eliminate that possibility of having to finish out the term? Or not be able to
resign,
finish out the term.
Yeah.
That would be the only reason, that would be one of the very few reasons I would see that I would be okay with an extension or some kind of exception, that you wouldn't have to force someone to resign midterm.
Yeah.
But how often does that even happen?
I don't know how often it happens, but I mean, I assume it's come up multiple times, you know. The city councilors in Seattle their names are often floated anytime a mayor's race comes around. Like Lorena Gonzalez, if she'd served a second term, you know, she wouldn't have been able to run for mayor if she was living in Tacoma.
I am in favor of term limits.
Term limits for local politicians?
For local politicians as well. Now,
why?
Whether it should be three terms or I don't have an actual figure, but for example, I'm okay with Governor Inslee not being able to serve another term.
Sure.
I'm okay with, is the King County executive, is there a term limit on that?
I want to say it's three terms.
It's longer than Pierce County.
Pierce County is two terms. Yeah, exactly. So Bruce Dammeyer over in Pierce County, now he can't run again because
he serves two terms.
He served his two terms. Yep. Now, I think he's doing a good job, and I would be okay seeing him. So three terms, I think, is a good maximum. And I would say that I would be okay with that in terms of local.
I don't think we need it for city council. I don't think we need term limits for mayors because I can't come up with a single example in any local city of someone who's extended beyond that. The closest I can think of would be, Pam Roach. I think she was about a dozen years. Kathy on the
Pam Roach was a dozen years in the state.
Talking about Kathy here?
Yeah, Kathy on the she was on the King County Council. Yeah, I forget her last name. I'm sorry, but there's enough turnover in local politics, if voters want to keep someone there, why should the law keep them out? It's not like they're making the laws for the entire country and they're going to be serving at the age of 92 if they decide to leave.
Yeah, I'll just be simple. I know you said you can't really give an example. I don't think what happens when you have people in office for over 10 years, you want to talk about people getting set in their ways. The reason why we have a lot of things that we're so behind with now is because, especially on the federal level, we have so many politicians that's been in it. Like, I mean, no disrespect to our current president and all those people. Like, some of these folks have been in politics in this for 50 plus years. I know that's, you know, that's extreme there.
Yeah.
But when you start getting over 10 years, I just don't think it's fresh ideas. You know what you're good at? You're good at raising money. That's what you're good at when you've been in office
well,
that long.
I don't think you actually have to try as hard to raise money. And I would actually point out that there are downsides to the idea of term limits, right? Because presidents do not start accomplishing squat really until their second term, because they have to ensure that they're appealing to everybody, etc. If you have a mayor, new mayor, every single 4 years, you are turning over the leader of almost every department in your city, and it's really hard to plan. It's really hard to have continuity. And so if you have some continuity of leadership, there's an upside to that as well.
Yeah. In the example of King County Executive Dow Constantine, he is serving his fourth term now. And I would imagine that there are many people who feel like four terms is enough.
How could I argue with that point with Dow? All right, moving on to the pages of the Atlantic, which argues that touch screens are ruining cars. They say that they are distracting, that they are dangerous, that it's basically like having a large cell phone on the center console of your car, and that smart technology for vehicles is highly overrated. What say you, G, as a man with a very smart vehicle?
Well, let me answer the first part first. Yes, I do believe that those screens can be very distracting. They're just like a big old iPad in the console right there. So, yes, I do agree with that. Two, what was the next part of it you said? You said it's overrated?
It's dangerous. Dangerous, yeah. The author also makes a nostalgic appeal to the way that cars used to run. You could, you know, click the radio dials. There's physical toggles. The feel of driving a car with a touchscreen is akin to driving an automatic versus a stick shift, right? There's an aesthetic to it.
The comfort level to, you know, cars with all of the bells and whistles is the difference. Like my two cars that I drive, one car is like driving an iPhone and the other one is like driving an Android.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was a shot at Android users. Hmm. But go ahead.
So judgmental.
So I would say that you're not going to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And
hey,
unless you're willing to. My father-in-law used to have a truck that had absolutely nothing. It was the bare bones, the most basic truck that you could get.
Yeah.
I don't even know that. It didn't even have a radio. It had nothing. So there really were no distractions. But those days are gone. So whether it is a touchscreen or whether it's dials, I basically think that it's no difference. You're going to be distracted. You've got your phone as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've made this argument before, but like the physical toggles, you can move those without actually looking at them. You can't change the controls on a touchscreen without actually taking your eyes off the road. But I think the whole idea of smart cars, touchscreens, etc., I hate it. There's no reason your car should be connected to the internet whatsoever. First of all, it's only used to raise your insurance rates, right? Oh, I know you get updates on your car, so that's really sweet. I wish I could get an update on mine.
What about people who drive for a living?
What about people who drive for a living?
And maybe would be stationary, not in movement when they're using the computer.
Huh? What do you? I'm
so
legit,
for example,
not understanding.
Someone who does food delivery, for example, or whatever it is. I mean, they would. You said you cannot see any use
for connecting your car to the internet.
Yes,
you can. Let me give you all of the examples of why it is good. One, sometimes I'll leave here and I'll go out in the parking lot and I'll do a Zoom call from my car.
Cool.
That is fantastic to be able to do that. Sometimes It is great to, if you, and I haven't done it yet, if you can go camping. There's so many benefits. Now, can camping? I take that Zoom call and go driving? No.
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing it while you're driving.
It won't let you. It won't let you be able to do those things. So, but again, Chef, you're talking about something that you're saying that you hate it. How you hate it, I don't know, because you've never experienced
it. Okay, yeah, no, my parents have cars that are connected to the internet, and you know what it does?
Oh, yes!
You know what it does?
What does it do?
It beeps every time that you move over 2 inches in your lane. There's at least 4 features that my dad cannot turn off that drive him crazy. Not to mention the cars that turn off every time you brake for 2 seconds to save gas. I find all the new cars extremely annoying. Give me something, I turn the key, it has gas, and it works. But I'm a dinosaur.
Yeah, kind of like you.
I'm losing.
Kind of like you don't like parking spaces either, but go ahead.
Good one. All right. I have an ethical dilemma I need to bring to you, Ursula. There is a man in Mexico who scored the deal of a lifetime thanks to, let's see, it was a translation error in currency exchanges. There was a man in Mexico who was able to purchase 2 pairs of Cartier earrings for $14. The price of those earrings was actually $14,000. Cartier actually did deliver on his purchase. He posted the earrings. He's got photos of them online. But there's a bunch of people who are saying, how dare you do this? This is basically the equivalent of theft. What say you, Ursula?
So Cartier gave him the earrings.
They had them listed on their website for $14. They're worth $14,000.
Okay.
Clearly an error.
It was an error, but there is a rule in retail. Mm-hmm. Many retail places have this, and maybe Cartier does too, but if something is posted, like when I worked in retail, if I put the wrong sign up and a customer came up and said, I got this from here, and this is supposed to be the price, and it rings up incorrectly, I would have to give them the price because the signage was incorrect. That was our bad.
Yeah.
And so because of our mistake, they got the deal, and it could be a deal of a lifetime. I would say the same thing with Cartier. It wasn't this guy who stole from them.
Sure.
It was the company that made the mistake. I think he has the right to say, well, because he didn't
they
make
made the mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, they made the mistake.
Gee, what say you?
Yeah, it's very easy. Like, it's not theft. The retailer made the mistake. This person is not like he stole them. They go to buy it and like, oh, sorry, you got the wrong thing. All I keep thinking about was there was a pair of pearls recently that I did not get. And I was about to get because the price, I was like,
this is
a great price.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yes. So I'm getting ready to get it and everything. And they say, oh, no, no, that's not the price. This is the price. And so they corrected me. And I just want to tell you, Ursula, I'm still hurt about that because I thought that I was getting ready to get these pearls for a certain
of a
price.
Lifetime.
So, not theft.
But in the case of, let's just say again, back at the retail place.
Yeah.
Now, if you think that you're going to be smart and you're going to put something that's really expensive on a sale rack and then claim that you pulled it from the sale rack, that's theft or that's attempted theft because you know that it wasn't on the sale rack and you're trying to sneak one.
Okay, so let me give you an alternate scenario here. Let's say that there's a beloved local furniture maker and they've got a store in Pike Place Market, right? And they have this really sweet couch that you've been eyeing for a long time. And the price of that couch is $10,000, handcrafted, Italian leather, beautiful black walnut frame, artisan created. And they print out a label for it that says $100. Are you telling me that you would go up to the front of that store and say, I'd like this for $100? Or are you going to point it out to them and say, I think you made a mistake on your price? Isn't there some onus on you when you know that something is horribly, horribly mispriced to inform the owner of the store that there's been clearly a mistake made?
Yes. Yes. So would I do that? I would question it and I say, $100, is that correct? And if they say, oh my gosh, you know, that was a mistake, blah, blah, am I going to insist? Probably not.
So the difference is Cartier.
It would be
it's
obvious.
Giant conglomerate company.
No, I'm
Cartier.
You asked if it was theft.
Yeah.
Now, if Cartier insists, hey, that was a big mistake, we need to have you return that, I probably would return it.
All right. G, last one here. Someone in the Seattle Times today is ranting against folks who buy up big blocks of tickets for, you know, shows, concerts, etc., and then resell them on Ticketmaster. And they say that this should not be legal, that if someone purchases a ticket and later can't go, they should not be able to post it for more than the original selling price. This would solve the problem of ticket inflation that we see across the country. Should it be illegal to sell your ticket for more than its face value?
Oh, boy. oh, boy. No, I don't think it should be illegal. No, not at all. If you want to sell your, if you're able to sell your ticket, so face value of that ticket is $150 and you are able to honestly sell that to someone for $200, then I'm perfectly fine with it. Ursula?
But aren't you describing scalping?
Well, scalping's legal if you do it online, but not if you do it outside the stadium, right? I mean, Ticketmaster
so
allows you to do this.
No intention of going.
Yep.
And they're going to buy up blocks of
army
tickets.
Army of bots buying the tickets.
Yeah, no, I have a big problem with that. I think that's
same.
Yeah, I think that's outrageous, and that's one of the reasons why so many of these concerts and performances are unaffordable.
Yeah.
And I think that, is it illegal? No. Is it?
Should it be
immoral? Possibly. I just think it's unfair. Should it be? I think that there should be something that prevents people from buying blocks and then turning around and scalp. I mean, that's just like scalping.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But it's legal online, apparently. Shouldn't be.
Yeah. So you don't think so, Ursula? If you get ready to buy some tickets, you should get it. You should only have to be able to sell it to face value. You can't make any money on
if
that
I buy
a block.
A couple of tickets for myself, and then it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go. We're talking about buying so many that other people can't buy.
Well, yeah, but you can't. I mean, like, if it's four, if it's eight, if it's two. So you're saying, like, hey, if you bought those tickets, once you bought those tickets, you cannot sell for more than face value.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you buy large.
So you have a number.
Blocks.
Okay, what's the number of tickets?
More than four.
No, oh, okay.
I got a lot of friends, so a lot
more
of friends.
More than four. All right, Ursula, I didn't get to hear your 11:30, my friend.
Our 11:30 is going to be about this group of asylum seekers who now have moved to some other place. What's going to happen? What should happen? Text us, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. I know this is going to be tough, but how much of a priority should it be in terms of everything else going on in the world?
I'm scared to talk about this.
I know, but we have the hard conversations.
Yeah. We'll talk about it next. Gene Ursula.
Ursula Show, where we don't shy away from tough topics, and this is one for sure, because hundreds of asylum-seeking refugees from South America and Africa are now staying at an encampment at a park in Seattle's Central District, and our reporter Sam Campbell was there this morning and spoke to one of those who are seeking permanent shelter.
Dozens of blue, orange, and green tents cover the grass at Powell Barnett Park, but neighbors say this sprawling encampment is new. This small park houses hundreds of asylum seekers from Africa and South America. Speaking through a translator over the phone, Samuel from Congo tells me,
"They're my baby.
They have a child who was born here. They have kids who are in school here. They are the future of America. And they're asking for support to be able to stay here."
They've shuffled from place to place in King County as temporary aid from cities runs out, leaving the group in and out of hotels.
And we know that, you know, several hundred were living at DoubleTree in SeaTac. There were others living in Airbnbs. There were others living at a hotel in Tukwila. There were others living in a hotel in Kent. And it's kind of a piecemeal patchwork solution. And there's no real answer as to what should happen. And my question is, in the list of priorities, where does this land? And how sustainable is it? It's not sustainable what is happening right now. I mean, every other way, there have been anonymous donations, which that was great, but that only gave them a few more weeks at these hotels. And it doesn't seem to be that there is a solution. And the number has grown. We're talking about now, there's an estimate just in King County alone that the migrant and asylum seeker crisis has grown to exceed 1,000 people now, almost all of them coming through the church down there in Tukwila. Tukwila's Riverton Park United Methodist Church, where they were staying until the conditions got so bad, they said. There were rats. It was rat infested. They were out in the cold, and they were like, we can't do this anymore. But yet that church just kept accepting more and more. And now we've got this issue as to where do they go?
It's not sustainable, period. And the reason why I say it's not sustainable is because right here at home, right here, we still have people that can't go and get health insurance. We still have people right now that probably need mental health help, or, you know, they can't go and seek that because they don't maybe have the insurance to go and do those things. We still have people right now that are working hard every single day and can barely afford to live. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. Like, have you ever in your lifetime been doing everything you can? You don't have a criminal record. You've been working your tail off. You've been doing everything you're supposed to do. And you're not, you know, you're not the whole, that person's lazy. No, no, no. This isn't you. You're actually working your tail off. And yet you still can't afford to live. I'm saying this because at some point, I think that this discussion is going to have to be all sides talking about this and all coming to the agreement, Ursula. I don't care what your politics are. This can't sustain. And I've been there, 2009. You guys know the story. I've told you, right? Where I've been in that place where I didn't have a place to live. And whether it's Seattle, Chicago, New York, all of these different cities where it is happening, that this continuation of this, when here at home, we still can't, like, people that live here, born here, can't afford to do things. Like, what ends up happening is you make people like me, right? You start hearing it in my voice. You start hearing me say, okay, yo, we got to do something. Now, there are people already on the other side, is like from the get-go.
Well, it brings to mind, okay, we've got a border crisis. We've got too many people coming into this country with no plan, no support. They're coming through. We can't even take care of people who are in this country. And now we have people from other countries coming in, and they have horrible conditions in many cases. And in some cases, they just look at this as a land of opportunity. But in many cases, they truly need to get out of terrible situations. They're getting free legal aid. They're getting donations. They're getting English language classes. But one of the big things, one of the big obstacles is that there are federal regulations that keep them from getting work permits. So they can't work. So they have, then they are dependent on the government helping out or private donations helping out. There is no plan. Again, there were some proposals in Olympia this past session. I think Inslee was proposing more than $8 million and an additional one-time infusion of $5 million for immigration or immigrant assistance. And then another $3 million for hotel stays, food, and services. I mean, that was a proposal. But again, that's going to be a Band-Aid. Advocates for these people, the asylum seekers, are saying we need $25 million at a time when dollars are scarce.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a moral obligation to me to help out, but it also doesn't feel like our moral obligation, right? It feels like a federal responsibility because the feds are the ones that created this problem with the backlog in the asylum courts, with not allowing them to work. I mean, if you look at, like, my family, I'm an average white guy, right? They came over from Sweden, Germany, England, etc. They all came over. They were all seeking asylum, freedom, new country, whatever. They were all allowed to work as soon as they got here. The system has changed. Immigration has not. And the fact that this is landing in cities' laps and in states' laps across the country is an embarrassment. It is an embarrassment. And only until Congress says we have to foot the bill for this will there be any changes, because they're not going to make the asylum process faster unless they have to pony up for the bill.
I think the states should sue
the federal government for the cost of this, because they created the fiasco and they're preventing it from being fixed.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Take that up, Bob.
There is one, apparently one family or one person out of the thousand that have come in, the asylum seekers, that has been able to get a work permit. And you can see where it would be very easy to say, look, we've got our own problems, send them back to their own countries. And you hear that. Mm-hmm. And while I understand in some cases the sentiment, because it's like, wait a minute, we can't even take care of our own. I mean, if you're looking at it from a global perspective, there are people who really do need to escape where they're from, and this has always been a country that will accept. But again, I look at it as we desperately need immigration reform. We need a way for them to work temporarily until they can legally become citizens, if that is in fact what's going to happen. But the other thing that should never have happened is that this church, and maybe her heart was in the right place, but why this church just kept accepting people? I mean, there were people coming from everywhere.
Right.
Somehow the word was out that, hey, come over here and they'll figure it out. And now we've got a problem that is seemingly unfixable.
Yeah. It's bad. Coming up next, text messages, feedback, and we have Ursula's Words to Live By. Gene Ursula. Ursula Show. Ursula, it's now time for these good old text messages. What you got?
Well, how about you start, because I am
okay.
About ready.
Well, I'm starting off with your favorite topic.
Okay.
Graffiti drones.
Oh.
Aaron in Tacoma says, in the 90s, I was a tagger in the LA area. Freeways and high traffic areas are the prize. The more exposure, the better. For an example, trains and freeway walls are seen by more people. Just think. Advertising.
Mm. 253 says, there is a simple way to fix the graffiti issue. We did it on one of our buildings. We paid a graffiti artist to paint a mural on the building that kept getting tagged and had the artist sign it. 95% of taggers will not tag over someone's art. Oh.
Kevin in Black Diamond says, I've noticed Mercer Island has very little to no graffiti. What are they doing differently?
Well, that wasn't the case in the tunnel. Has that been cleaned up? Okay, should ticket scalping be illegal online? Ernie in Kent says, we allow that when it comes to houses. Corporations buy homes with no intentions of keeping them just to drive up the price. Same with tickets. We can't pick and choose, as quoted by the great G. Scott.
Britney Spears is reportedly out of control. Brian in Bellevue says, I don't see the problem. She is exactly like most Americans right now, living way beyond her means and racking up unsustainable amounts of debt. Hashtag one of us.
A grizzly ate some ducks at the Woodland Park Zoo. Brian from Arlington said, last time I was at the zoo, there was a white bunny in the anaconda enclosure. The zoo put it in there for it to eat. Didn't seem to mess up my three-year-old. We told her what was going on. She's seen eagles kill our chickens and ducks. She watched our dog catch and eat a sparrow. We'll see if it messes her up, but so far, so good.
Scenarios. Should I tell my neighbor that my dog killed her daughter's pet bunny? Shannon says the rabbit owners very well could call animal control. Even though the rabbit was loose and in the dog's yard, the dog could be in big legal trouble and the owners could be forced to put it down.
I'm going to guess they wouldn't be forced to put it down. I actually tried to look that up before we started discussing it. 206 says, ooh, Wow, so disappointed in G and Chef. Now we know that they would lie right to our face and think it's okay. And in front of their kid. Ursula, I'm sure you wouldn't quit over this, but it would definitely change my respect level. And if I were a boss, it would definitely shape my opinion of them going forward. Oh, wait, he keeps going. Wait a minute. But more than that, they're married. Think about being a wife to a guy who would lie so easily. They think it's okay to say it on the radio. So disappointing.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, Chef. Of all the ones that you could include, you put that one in.
Yeah.
Well,
that
was my favorite. There were a lot of people who were upset, though. I will say that.
I want to answer this. One, as far as if you said, and if I were their boss, I would definitely shape my opinion of them going forward. My bosses don't really like me anyways. That's one. Two, as far as us being married, Ursula, you taught me this. Tell the truth.
Tell the truth.
And I did.
You did tell the truth that you wouldn't tell the truth about the.
I did.
Do I look fat in these jeans?
I did.
Okay, now.
Tell the truth.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
What next,
Is
Ursula?
It okay to buy $14,000 earrings for $14 if the price is listed incorrectly? 425 says, if you meant to leave a $10 tip and forgot the decimal point, should you have to pay the $1,000? It's your mistake.
206 says, Ursula is keeping $14,000 jewelry that she knows was mispriced at $14. But she says you have to tell your neighbor if your dog ate the rabbit. $14.
Okay, wait.
It wasn't.
Was it just $14?
No.
Yes, $14.
Was it $14?
Yes, $14.
Oh, wow.
And was the jewelry company, was Cartier telling him to return it?
No.
Okay, then
Cartier let him keep it.
They delayed
his shipment for, I think,
three weeks. That was the difference. If Cartier told me, hey, it was a real mistake and it's so obvious it was a mistake, I would absolutely return it.
It's good advertising for Cartier.
Exactly.
All right, Ursula, it's time for it. Words to Live By, brought to you by Wilcox Farms.
Well, this is in regard to our funny discussion.
Okay.
I don't know who I can credit for this quote, but character is doing the right thing when nobody's looking. There are too many people who think that the only thing that's right is to get by, and the only thing that's wrong is to get caught.
Come on.
I thought I would throw it out there.
Miss $14 earrings.
Yes, exactly.
Good stuff, Ursula. What do you got, Nick?
Gee, you're really thinking about that one.
No, yeah.
You had to stop there for a sec there.
Still thinking about our immigration discussion.
I know.
Go ahead.
That one was tough.
Go ahead.
Well, word here has it there's a wild zebra on the loose, running off the Cascade foothills, joining all the geese and moose. And while some maybe have seen it from afar at homes or streets, once they try to chase it down, there's no chance the two will meet. But just don't try looking near the zoo where ducks found that new pond, or you might be rushing past the gate where bears give a hungry response.
Barracuda.
And we know G might be scared of all the bears. Even at zoos, his whole interest in the chaps they wear might break his fears right through, and he might be looking a little extra tasty in those zebra chaps, too. So keep your eyes peeled out there.
That's such a good visual.
Ursula, good stuff.
It was great hanging out with you these last 3 hours. This goes to all of you listening right now. Mm-hmm. If you missed any part of our show, make sure that you check out our podcast.
Yeah.
Especially go back to the scenarios. Would love it if you weigh in on that one. And we'll do this again tomorrow.
That's right. What do you got going the rest of the day?
I am going to get together with some girlfriends tonight.
What?
Joey's.
You like Joey's, don't you?
We do. It's our meeting place for the gals.
Is our good buddy Sharon going to be there?
Not this time.
Not this time. All right. Thank you, Chef. Thank you, Ursula. Nick, appreciate you.
You too.
The Jack and Spike Show is coming up next. Make sure you stick around for that. We appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. And as always, be kind.
Hope you had as much fun as we have. So long, everybody.